we also have Islam. And so Islam then doesn't fall into polytheism. In fact, they're strictly Unitarian. There's no Trinity. There's just a single God, Allah. And it's here's what Bonson says about this, is that maybe someone can do better with further revelation. Let's look at Islam. While Mormonism is an example of polytheistic biblical counterfeit, Islam is a Unitarian biblical counterfeit. Muslims reject the Trinity. They believe the doctrine of the Trinity is idolatrous. The original author of the Quran thought of the Trinity is skeptical at best. It appears that they think that Mary is a part of the Trinity, it's neither here nor there. You talk to any Muslim today about the Trinity, and they would view it as idolatrous. So there's only one God who is the one person. His name is Allah, and his messenger or prophet was Muhammad.
Right. And of course, their holy book, the Quran, is what is it, Bonson asks us, and how did it come into being? It's good to investigate these questions because one of the points a Muslim apologist will make is that there are no variants in the Quran as there are in the Bible, right? Right. So obviously there are lots of translations of the Bible, and so there are differences in these various translations. And Bonson tells us with the Bible, we have various manuscript traditions that have somewhat different readings. Obviously, the science of textual criticism has been developed to look at these variances and decide which is most likely the original. None of them affects any major doctrine, so they're not really all that important, but the variances do exist. But Muslims, he says, will tell you, we have no variances in the Quran. And so the Quran is superior to the Bible.
Right. Right. But we don't talk about the Uthmanic revision of bring your memories, bring your different translations, bring them to me. We'll write one version of the Quran. We'll throw all the others in the fire. So there can't be a study like we have. So that's super helpful, but they're absolutely correct. Again, another James White book, What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Quran, is an excellent resource on the history of the Quran and the textual avenues from there. We supported at our church a missionary, the late Keith Small, who did an amazing job of studying early Quranic manuscripts, and his work was really, really good too. I've got his book signed behind me too, and I just always want to shout him out because he passed away when he was going to come talk at a church again, and it was sweet meeting him the first time. And I got like 45 minutes the first time that I met with him to just kind of pepper him with all sorts of questions, and I think he was shocked that anyone knew what his study was over here, but that was a lot of fun. All right. So for this reason, we must remember that the Quran came from and its own textual history. Muhammad would go into a cave, and sometimes in that cave, he would be caught up with religious ecstasy. He didn't know how to write, and so that's one of the kind of proofs that Muslims have, is here's this unlearned man who's revealing this big thing. And even Muhammad would say that when he met with an angel, he didn't know if it was an angel or a demon at the time. And so we would say, well, we probably could guess which version of that question would fall. But when he would get these alleged revelations from Allah, he would cry out and they'd have to be written down. And some of them he had to remember. In fact, through the early points in Muslim history, there was a concern about how much was broken up and remembered through different people. And then when they had their war campaigns, that these people could be killed and there would be portions of the Quran that could be lost. So there was a big concern about getting it written down. So at the time, they didn't have to look at good quality writing material. It turns out that the Quran was originally made up of particles of revelation written down on bones and leaves, sometimes papyrus, though not often. One day, someone had to bring all this together and make a book out of it, and it will probably not surprise you then that the early days of the new religion, there were different translations as to what Muhammad actually said. And again, until the Uthmanic revision, this is what brought Arabic into kind of a one pronunciation, like we saw with Germany, with Martin Luther's translation. We saw King James version of the Bible. It funneled how people pronounced and spelled different words because
kind of codified the language.
Yeah, and it is really interesting, and you know, not to knock the history of humanity here, but that is a pretty impressive movement when so many people speak all these different dialects that, you know, can still be around and still influence different speaking engagements. But really, an important book like the Quran or the Bible kind of solidifies, you know, the language for the people in the time and place that, you know, that nationalism wasn't a thing because nation was too big for people. So you really had like cities and different little epics in countries that we don't think about today. So.
And so Bahnsen picks up on this and makes the same point, actually, that you've been making here. You know, they brought all this together. They made one book out of it. He says that proved to be embarrassing. You know, getting rid of all the rest of the books proved to be embarrassing to the Muslims. And so in the third caliph, this is when this happened, of this new religious and social movement, all the variant translations were called in on pain of death. And one translation was chosen as the original and the rest were destroyed. And so this is how the Muslim performed the miracle of having no variant readings, right. He tells us, right?
Right. Okay, so on top of that, Islam's five major doctrines. They have five major doctrines of Islam. First, Allah is the one true God. Second, Allah has sent many prophets to guide men. And Muhammad is the last of these great, and he's the greatest of these prophets. Third, the four inspired books, the Pentateuch, which is the Law of Moses, the Psalms, the Gospel of Jesus, and the Quran. The Quran is the most important. All the other ones, the Injil and the Pentateuch, you know, they have their special place, but we'll see that this means that the Quran itself recognizes the Pentateuch, Psalms, and the Injil, the Gospels, as previous revelations. But there seems to be an issue when you refer back to the other things.
Right. And so Bahnsen says, if a Muslim says that the Quran follows a long line of revelation from Allah, including portions of the Bible that he claims are inspired, your internal critique then can start there. Let's go on to these parts of the Bible and compare them to the Quran, he suggests, right? And so the Quran contains several interesting teachings, Bahnsen tells us, not the least of which is that Jesus did not die on the cross. Judas was substituted for him, according to the Quran. It says that the mother of Jesus was Miriam, the sister of Moses. And of course, a confusion that probably arose because their names sound alike. Miriam, Mary, right? And the Quran was based on an original, an oral tradition. And so to this day, this is still, Bahnsen tells us, an embarrassment to scholars of the Quran. The best answer that he has heard is that Mary was a woman like Mary. That's what they meant to say, right? And so that's why these two are conflated, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, we see, you know, different, you know, early stories of Jesus that came out of the kind of a Gnostic gospel period. And again, you have to remember, this is 600 years after, you know, Jesus is around. And we're supposed to trust a man who 600 years after the events took place is telling us all these things. So, you know, Jesus has, you know, he's making little clay birds and he brings them to life, or he gets angry at a small child and kills him and raises him up again. So, you know, all these things come from probably Muhammad being on these trade routes and kind of getting little snippets of things. And so, you know, what's orthodox out there? What is the Trinity? Oh, the Trinity is God, Jesus, and Mary. Well, okay, you know, I'm hearing these other people talk about the Trinity. That's three. And so we obviously can't believe that. And so you have these.
Well, three is three, though, right?
Right, three is three. At least here, yes. And so, you know,
doesn't matter which threes, it's three.
Right. So you have only 40 Arabic words describing anything about Jesus. And so to say, oh, Jesus is a really important person, you know, it really does undercut when the majority of Muslim knowledge that is outside the Injil is just comes down to 40 Arabic words. So it's just something, little tidbit of information there. Okay. So most importantly, though, there is a doctrinal conflict between the teachings of Moses and David and Jesus and what Muhammad said. Now, if the teachings of Moses is inspired, and if Deuteronomy 13:18, again, that you are to have future revelation must be judged according to previous revelation, and if the alleged future revelation in the Quran conflicts with the previous revelation of Moses, which one has to go? By their own logic, which must go is the Quran. You know, so it's this, again, after everything's been well translated. Well, don't you believe that the Injil is the word of God? Well, yes, but it's been corrupted over time. Well, but not the Quran? No, not the Quran. But the Injil was, even though it also was the word of God. Yes. And so there's a conflict there that's not explained other than just, well, it says things that we don't like. You know, John 1 is just terrible because it describes Jesus as God, and we don't want that.